After several hours, a kind of pink fog began rolling in, and they moved carefully as the patches of moisture came up to their knees, and then their waists. In the mist ahead, amber lights appeared. Rock stopped with the others just behind him. There were 50 or so of the dancing red lights floating just above the ground, perhaps a mile ahead in the deep blueness of the falling night.
You hear?
No.
Engines coming this way. Take cover.
Rock pulled the particle beam rifle from his shoulder and rested it on a nearby fallen tree, which stood about shoulder height. Perkins and McCaughlin both readied their liberators and took off the safeties. Kim still had the Russian officer's machine pistol that Rock had given her back in Pavlov City, and she took it from the jacket pocket of the dead Red's clothing she was wearing. Whatever it was heading right their way. As the source of the sound came out of the fog, the lights were from some 50 or so motorcycles, working and ridden by...
My God, they're Indians.
The motorcyclists were feathered, painted Indians, feathers flying in bands around their foreheads. The ones in front held ancient long-barreled rifles with one arm while they steered with the other.
Shit, they know we're here. Shoot if they get past that boulder field, but into the dirt in front of them. No use killing unless we have to.
I've not seen the likes of this in, well, ever.
The cycles came forward at about 40 miles an hour in a V formation. At the lead of the pack, riding an immense bike with a plexiglass visor and coonskins tied to the handlebars, a blue-painted, savage-looking man with a headdress of brilliantly colored feathers and three green stripes of paint down each cheek raised his right hand in an obvious motion to slow down. Behind him, on the other roaring cycles, were men dressed in animal skins, feathers, and strips of brightly colored plastic material. All had their faces and exposed flesh on their arms and legs garishly decorated with every color and geometric design imaginable. The riders carried an assortment of strange weapons over their shoulders, from antique rifles with huge muzzles to bows and quivers of arrows. The lead 10 cycles had mounted short-barreled machine guns tied down between the handlebars. Behind the drivers of many of the motorcycles, equally strangely dressed women sat on a second seat, holding their drivers' hips. This apocalyptic post-war parade headed directly toward the free fighters, hidden behind their fallen tree.
Should we scare them a bit?
No, not yet. They're slowing a bit. Maybe.
The leader dismounted, swinging his headdress of rainbow feathers over the seat behind him. It fell to his ankles, rippling with subtle shades and movements of nearly 2,000 feathers that made up the elaborate symbol of leadership. The leader walked to within 30 feet toward Rock and his team. They could see his full regalia now, a bearskin vest to the waist, a necklace of carnivore teeth falling in three rows down around his neck, long loincloth made of some dark hide, and high red plastic boots nearly to the knee. Around his waist, the Indian leader wore a long knife on one hip and an old U.S. Army issue 45 automatic pistol on the other. The free fighters watched the approaching apparition with their jaws dropped half open. They had all in their time seen some strange sights, but this may well have been the strangest. The Indian cupped his hand to his purple-painted lips and yelled out,
"Hey, I know you cats are up the old tree! Hey, man, come on down! We dig you!"
Perkins, what the hell did he just say?
Sounds like he wants to be friends. But, Rock, I don't trust him. This peculiarly evolved culture is obviously warlike. Raiders, pirates.
I'm going out there. Do you think they'll recognize a white flag?
It's a pretty universal symbol here in America, even among isolated groups. Rock, let me come with you. I can speak to them. Translate.
Hey, man, like, cool out! You know we ain't cruising for bruising, you dig?
What the hell is he saying? It sounds like English, but...
I think it's a mixture of several things, Rock. American slang plus beatnik jive circa 1950s. Quite interesting, really. Let me just make a note.
Beatnik?
Yes, Rock. They were... It's too complicated. I'll tell you later. Hey, McCaughlin, you got a hanky?
I sure do. And it's, well, mostly white.
Ugh. Roxon, did you want...
No.
Perkins tied the kerchief to a small branch, and the two of them stepped out from the tree.
Hey, you groovy cats. We dig you, here. Come on over here and slap five daddy-os. It's cool, you fool. Send you back to school.
We're here in peace. Dude. Cat.
Man, groovy. The cats are hep, dude. Peace, man.
The chief held up his right hand, making a V with his fingers.
Rock, do what he just did. It's important.
The two free fighters raised their hands and made the ancient hippie gesture of peace.
Hello. We're fellow Americans, and we come with peaceful intentions.
Hey, man! The cat speaks hip dog. Where you at, daddy-o? You hip to the Dharma? The road to the oneness?
I think he's asking if we're religious, and he wants a yes answer.
We believe, and believe in the right to believe.
That's a strange way of grooving to the smoothness, but you dudes seem okay. At least you ain't Ruskies. You know Ruskies.
We're not Reds. We're free fighters. Americans. And you?
Oh, hell, man. We are the people. The Kerouac warriors. The beat messengers of ethereal poetry. The chanted out Tibetan hipster kung fu fighters from the outer galaxies. We, my square people, too. Of the crazy alligator.
The Indian leader folded his arms across his chest in satisfaction.
Hey, where's your pad, man?
West of here.
West? Crazy, man. Now, if you would all just like drop your boom tubes like nice boys, I think we can parlay at the Ginsburg's house. That's our top cheese. Dig?
Roxanne stepped to the side and brought the black beam up. Within a second, every one of the crazy alligators were out. The four of them walked over and inspected their catch. Perkins had a field day going through the Indian saddlebags and taking notes on the decorations on their cycles.
This is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
The archaeologist noted the medicine pouches, the beat poetry books, yellow and disintegrating. There were all kinds of mystical symbols among the people, from the long feathered headdresses to Buddhist magical symbols.
Rock, I'm going to take some skin and nail samples for DNA testing back at CC.
No.
It would tell us a lot about their...
Absolutely not. These people, friends or enemies, are still people. I don't want anything except a search for security reasons and some photographs for the archives without their permission. You got me?
Okay. But I say it's a mistake. Science should...
Humanity over science! Damn it, man, that's how the war started. Technology over decent human values. I won't let us act like the Reds.
When the Indians awoke about an hour later, they thought it odd that all their cycles had fallen over, and they were lying beside them on the cold ground. It had seemed an instant ago that they were drawing their weapons.
Oh, man. What happened? Magic. The magicians, man. Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme.
No, we're not magicians. We used a weapon we possess on you because you were about to fire on us. You've been unconscious for about an hour, but it isn't magic.
You could have killed us, cats. We understand, man, that you're powerful, mean dudes. We want to be friends. Can you dig it, Kimisabi?
I can dig it.
All right, slip me five, Mr. Rock Around the Clock. I'm Trickster Deity, and we are the craziest of the crazy alligators.
He held his palm up high, and Rock, having learned the ancient American form of greeting from Detroit, responded in kind.
Woo! The cat knows a high five. Look out. Come on back with us to our digs. No tricks from the trickster. We're in a nearby mountain.
With the crazy alligators taking Rock and the others on the back of their cycles, the party of thundering vehicles tore off across the dark fields to the Indians' home. They made good time, with the cycles shooting across the terrain faster than any land vehicle Rock had ever seen. Rock would have to talk to Dr. Schechter about the feasibility of building some of their own back in Century City. Of course, gasoline was the basic problem with any sort of combustion engine. The alligators must have had some secret source of the precious fluid. Within an hour and a half, they were at the foot of a towering red rock mountain that Trickster yelled to Rock was their home.
See that pile of boulders shaped like a man sitting in meditation to the left?
Yeah.
That's the entrance, man.
We got guards stationed everywhere, man, in the rocks. Though you can't see them, they can see you. If the red showed ahead, they're dead.
Trickster motioned with his hand for the troop to move forward. There was a narrow shaft of darkness among the boulders, and they rode into it, barely slowing down. Once inside, the bikes moved single file through a narrow canyon. At first, they turned on their big lights on the front of the bikes, but within a minute or so, they clicked them off again. The very walls of the solid rock tunnel glowed with a shimmering blue iridescence bright enough to see by. They rode for about 5 minutes when the narrow trail suddenly widened before them, and they came into a vast stalactite-filled cavern that made the free fighters gasp. The place was gigantic and absolutely porcupine with the glowing blue spears of rock that made it look like some immense jewel. The cavern sloped slightly, and the bikes rode through it as the hanging mounds of pure blue stone dripped luminous fluid that formed streams of glowing water. They came after several minutes to a tranquil black lake that disappeared in the distance. There was some sight of light far off at the other end.
Heavy place, cats, right?
Heavy, man.
Here, get in.
They're outrigger canoes, Rock. There's names on them?
Yeah, they came with them, yeah.
Disneyland 1. Roadrunner 3. Rock, these canoes are from Hollywood.
Perkins, you talk about that place all the time. I wouldn't be surprised if half the shit we find across the country is from there.
Well, they had a prodigious output.
Here, Rock, my man. Snatch up an oar.
The glow of the rocks faded as they paddled out across the black water. Soon it was utterly black, except for the glowing compass dial that Trickster held in his hand at the front of the canoe.
Compass doesn't tell north. It just points to the Great Hall. Man, there's so much spiritual energy around the Ginsberg, the leader of our underground pueblo, that the compass always leads us home. And good thing, too, man, because there's a huge waterfall of this lake about a mile to the right. Bottomless, legend says.
How big is this lake?
Oh, no one knows, man. We are content to just groove on the area we have and be happy. Now, there are stories that these glowing people roam the unexplored edges of the cave down there. You ever dug on these glowing cats?
Yeah. Many of our free fighters have seen such glowers in the distance. It is said that their touch can kill a man instantly, but that's just hearsay. I've never seen one face to face. If they are real and not just some mirage, they seem to not want to be too social.
Yeah, well, man, they aren't human. They sail the huge boats out there on the lake and they're glowing in the dark. I saw one as a kid. Giving me the willies to even think about it, man. But they don't bother us, man, thanks to the power of the Ginsberg.
They arrived after about 20 minutes of rowing at the opposite bank where the glowing blue rock again permitted them to see. As they hit the sand and jumped out, the free fighters could suddenly see that what had, at first, looked like a sheer black face of a mountain was, in fact, the cliffside city composed of hundreds of adobe buildings piled atop one another in an immense hodgepodge of sand and stone.
How many people live here?
4,000 or 5,000? I don't know, man. We don't keep track of that sort of stuff. We found this place 70 years ago. Well, that is, my grandfather was wandering in the wilderness when he found the hole in Red Mountain, came inside. The Chumak Indians built this whole thing for protection some 10,000 years ago. And man, we moved in like cockroaches into the tenement. Dig?
Rock looked up, taking in the impressive living sculpture. The rock had a brownish, almost rusty appearance, he noted, probably containing a high iron content. That explained the magnetic pull. Hence the compass Trickster had used to guide them in. With Trickster in the lead, the free fighters walked up the steep steps that laddered the slopes of the Rock Mountain. Hundreds of faces appeared in the square stone windows and doors. Children ran down the steps, giggling and touching the party of Americans. Kim delighted in the beautiful young Indian children who gawked at her long blonde hair. Rock suddenly realized he hadn't seen any old people or crippled or sick people.
Where are your old people, Trickster?
Oh, the old ones are sent to the waterfall on the lake on flaming rafts to join the spirits at the bottom of the bottomless cavern into which the water falls.
They're killed?
They are sent to their creator.
Oh, how awful.
I know. Someone like Schechter.
Don't criticize, Rock. We don't know enough about their situation. Besides, we're on their land. We'd better be careful about anything we say for now.
They proceeded up the steps until the top, which leveled off to a wide plateau covered with more of the adobe mud and brick buildings. These, the largest of all, some nearly 100 feet high. They entered what was obviously the main building, brightly festooned with Indian markings and totems, through a door nearly 3 times human height.
Behold, the Temple of the Ginsburg! But first, let us arrange for your accommodations, man, and some chow-chow for some hungry squares.
They entered a large ceremonial hall filled with long oak tables and candelabras hanging from the vaulted ceilings.
Is this where we meet the Ginsburg?
No, fool, be cool. We engage in dining, you know, ceasing the gurglings. The Ginsburg holds court tomorrow. Hey, man, let's bring on the eats.
Within minutes, a small parade of maidens in short leather rawhide miniskirts and raccoon skin halters brought out trays of steaming food. Roxanne speared a slice off the tray of meat in front of him.
It's buffalo, man.
Wow, this is good.
Flagons of foaming beer were brought out, cold, sparklingly tasty.
Yeah, to our groovy new crazy friend cats. May we always have far-out times together.
Yeah! Groovy, crazy.
Rock, Kim, Perkins, and McCoughlin happily swigged down the delicious brew. They ate and drank with the Indians, whooping it up and dancing on the tables from time to time. It was hardly the way they had dinner back in Century City, but it sure as hell was fun. After about an hour, the heads of the free fighters began to spin. Things in the room, the spears on the wall, the large day-glow painted shields that dotted the walls, seemed to tilt at off angles. The mad slang of the crazy alligators seemed more and more hilarious to the free fighters. Kim looked like an angel to Rock, and the touch of her hand across the table sent chills up his spine. Trickster's face seemed to be melted into rainbow trails, his smile wide as an atomic chasm.
Hey, what's in this brew?
Why, it's just good old Mexicuato beer. Hallucinogenic mushroom brew, like we always chose.
Really? Perkins?
Probably from the peyote family, Rock. Moderate hallucinations. Non-toxic, unless you're stricken with beriberi. Anybody here got beriberi?
2 young, nubile maidens sat on Perkins' lap, crushing their firm breasts against him.
What, Rock?
I've always prided myself on staying off things like this.
Yeah, but it's not like it's dangerous.
Yeah, and everyone seems to be having a good time. Oh, what the hell? You only live once, right, Kim?
He leaned over and kissed Kim on her bare ivory neck. She beamed and kissed him. The touch of her lips were like ice fire, so passionate. Rock nearly swooned before he pulled himself away, his manhood suddenly bulging in his fatigues.
Perhaps we should go somewhere more private.
Your guest of honor, sweetie, is 2 flights up those spiral stairs over there. There's a Truex-sized bed. It just don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Rock and Kim rose and made their way unsteadily through the raucous throng and to the stairs, which were illuminated by the ever-present glowing blue rocks. Holding his angel in his arms, Rock walked to the bed at the far end of the room.
Here you are, baby.
Thanks. Now we can have some real fun.
Kim loosened her dress that the Indian women had given her and was out of it in a whisk. Her nubile, alabaster-skinned, angelic body was cast in the cherry-orange glow of the fire. She pulled Rock to the bed and fiddled with his zipper. Rock helped her pull down his pants and felt her warm lips engulf his engorged erection. She traveled, it seemed, thousands of miles down around him. She released her prize and looked up at him, smiling.
Get in bed.
Yes, ma'am.
Rolling together, she sidled up his strong, muscled body, which seemed like climbing a mountain of flesh. Her long platinum tresses slipped across his lips, and then her marshmallow pale softness pressed against his mouth. Kim pushed Rock over on his back and mounted him the way she had when he took her virginity in the cell at Pavlov City.